program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, introducing Pete's E-Cups, letting you send a friend a cup. On the web at Pete's.com. That's P-E-E-T-S.
...2006, and this is the KBOO Morning News. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Carlos Chavez.
Coming up on this morning's program, a Portland lawyer says his office was secretly searched because he represents an Islamic charity. A newly enacted federal law could void hundreds of Guantanamo prisoners' lawsuits challenging their detention, and a British Air Force doctor who refused to serve a third tour in Iraq is facing a court-martial. Weather for today calls for rain with temperatures in the mid-50s.
A Portland attorney says his office was secretly and maybe illegally searched just because he represents an Islamic client. Tom Nelson has already filed a lawsuit alleging that phone calls and email between his client and other lawyers were illegally intercepted by the government. But now Nelson says he believes somebody posing as a janitor entered his Portland office after hours last year. Nelson says his computer was rebooted and his papers were moved around. Another lawyer in the office says he surprised a man dressed as a janitor trying to enter Nelson's office. Nelson represents Salomon Al-Bute, the co-founder of the Al-Haramain Islamic Foundation chapter in Ashland, which has since closed. Nelson asked U.S. Attorney Karine Imergut to investigate, but Imergut says nobody in her office would ever conduct a search without a warrant.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Washington says it filed a Freedom of Information Act request today in an effort to uncover evidence that peace activists were monitored by counterterrorism agents. The requests were filed on behalf of 11 peace organizations across the state, and they seek to seek records of surveillance of their activities by the FBI, Department of Defense, and the Seattle Joint Terrorism Task Force. The groups include the American Friends Service Committee, the Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane, the Raging Grannies, Seattle Peace Corps, and Sound Nonviolent Opponents of War.
The August 6, 2001 presidential daily briefing given to Bush during his vacation in Texas. The briefing, titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the U.S., noted patterns of suspicious activity in this country consistent with preparations for hijackings or other types of attacks. Samet said he was so frustrated and so convinced that the attacks were imminent that he bypassed FBI officials in Washington and met with an FAA officer he knew in Minneapolis. But he said FAA agents never got back to him. A newly enacted federal law that could void hundreds of pending lawsuits filed by detainees at Guantanamo Bay is at the center of a case before a U.S. appeals court. Bush administration lawyers contend the Detainee Treatment Act, signed by Bush on December 30th, retroactively wipes out more than 200 lawsuits filed on behalf of over 300 detainees who are challenging the legality of their detentions. The attorneys for the detainees say that the law does not require dismissal of the lawsuits and want a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit to find it unconstitutional. The Detainee Treatment Act was a compromise reached among Senators Carl Levin of Michigan, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and John Kyle of Arizona. The act bars detainees from filing habeas corpus petitions used to fight unlawful detentions, although it allows them to appeal the rulings of military tribunals to the federal courts. The administration's chief lawyer said in court papers that the lawsuits filed by the Guantanamo Bay prisoners have disrupted the military's efforts to gather intelligence on terrorism from them. Detainee lawyers led by Thomas Wilner said the administration has done everything it could to avoid review of its actions in holding the detainees without charges, despite a 2004 Supreme Court ruling that cleared the way for the prisoners to file lawsuits challenging their detentions. The detainees' lawyers also note noted that many of the prisoners who have filed lawsuits were taken into U.S. custody in Afghanistan and Pakistan after the American military offered to pay bounties to local tribesmen for the capture of suspected Arab terrorists.
A British Air Force doctor who refused to serve in Iraq was told today that he must face trial by court-martial, this from The Guardian. After refusing to take part in training and deployment to Basra, Flight Lieutenant Dr. Malcolm Kendall-Smith now faces 5 charges for failing to comply with an order. He had already served 2 tours of duty in Iraq but refused to return there last June. But the judge advocate dismissed Dr. Kendall-Smith's argument that the invasion of Iraq was illegal and that he therefore did not have to obey orders to serve there. At a pretrial hearing last week, Dr. Kendall-Smith's lawyer said the officer believed that because Iraq had not attacked the UK or one of its allies, there was no lawful reason to enter the country. And on that basis, he argued that Dr. Kendall-Smith was entitled to disobey the unlawful orders.
Northeastern Australians are still recovering from the devastation of this weekend's Category 5 cyclone. Australian conservationists say that global warming is increasing the severity of cyclones, and the Australian government must not ignore environmentally friendly policies aimed at limiting climate change. Meanwhile, in the United States, a report issued on Tuesday ranks 100 of the world's largest businesses on their handling of global climate change. Selena Masuta reports from Washington, D.C.
Ceres, a Boston-based coalition of investors, environmental organizations, and other public interest groups, used a scoring system based on companies' sustained commitment to controlling greenhouse gas emissions, disclosing data and strategies, as well as regulatory actions. Investor pressure and a global demand for clean energy products are compelling U.S. businesses to act, but many businesses continue to fail to address their contribution to global warming, says Mindy Lubber of Ceres.
Many American companies still lag far behind their international peers on this issue. The 4 top scoring companies in the oil and gas sector were all based in Europe. No less worrisome, dozens of U.S. businesses in the electric power, oil and gas, coal, air transportation, and food product sectors are still largely dismissing this issue with business-as-usual strategies that may be putting their companies and their shareholders at risk.
A uniform national regulatory policy to guide companies is needed, says William Riley, a board member of DuPont, a science manufacturing company.
It would be so much more helpful if we move from a purely voluntary approach to a mandatory regulatory approach for cap and trade in climate, which is the basis for our Clean Air Act of 1990, which is hugely successful, much more so economically than we'd expected, and I think points the way to how we should proceed on climate.
In the series report, DuPont and Alcoa ranked number 1 and 2 in meeting the challenges of greenhouse gas limits. Reporting from Washington, D.C., this is Selena Masuta.
According to The Guardian, the Supreme Court is due to hear arguments in a case today that could overturn thousands of controversial patents. A lower court ruled that doctors could infringe on drug companies' ownership rights merely by thinking about the relationship between 2 chemicals in the human body. The case is over a patent granted in 1990 to scientists at the University of Colorado and Columbia in New York that discovered the high levels of an amino acid in the blood or urine tended to be associated with the deficiency of B vitamins. But their patent did not just relate to the tests they invented, but asserts their ownership of the idea of correlating the 2 chemicals, leading to the charge that they had patented a law of nature rather than a human invention. The current dispute began in 1998 after LabCorp stopped paying royalties to the Metabolite Laboratories, which owns the patent. LabCorp said it had started using a different testing method for the same correlation, but Metabolite sued and won. LabCorp was ordered to pay $7.8 million in damages and is now asking the Supreme Court to overturn that judgment. If the court finds in favor of LabCorp, thousands of patents could be at risk, including many of those granted in connection with the human genome. A group called Patients Not Patents cited a recent patent application for a method of evaluating a risk of occurrence of a medical condition in a patient, the method comprising receiving a patient data set for the patient and evaluating the data set with a model, predictive of the medical condition, which could, if granted, have patented the most basic aspects of being a doctor.
The Basque separatist group ETA has announced that they will begin a permanent ceasefire on March 24th. Spain's deputy prime minister said it was good news for all Spaniards, but appealed for more caution than ever. In 1998, ETA declared a full ceasefire, which was rescinded a year later and followed up by a strong resurgence of violence. ETA is considered by the United States and the European Union as a terrorist organization and has been blamed for killing over 800 people. The group says their objective is, quote, to start a new democratic process in the Basque country. In a statement released to the Basque media, three masked men wearing Basque berets sat behind a desk and announced that at the end of this process, Basque citizens will be able to have a voice and the power to decide their future. They also stated that an end to the conflict is possible today and now. This is the hope and desire of ETA. The Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero said earlier that a permanent ceasefire would be required before the Spanish government would engage in any talks. The Spanish government is now analyzing the ETA statement. This from the BBC.
The falling water levels of Lake Victoria, the largest lake in Africa and the world's second largest freshwater lake, is hampering the supply of water to millions of Africans who depend on the lake. Environmentalists blame the falling water levels largely on human factors and poor policies by some East African governments. This from FSRN.
East African environmentalists and others blame the region's falling water levels on the unchecked construction of dams at the mouth of Lake Victoria. Last month, Uganda was forced to reduce outflows at its Tiira and Narubale hydropower dams just north of the lake by about a third, after environment watchdogs accused Uganda of draining the lake to maintain its electricity supply. Geoffrey Kamese of the Uganda-based National Association of Professional Environmentalists is also a representative of the Africa Rivers Network. Kamese says the power stations were responsible for half of the lake's depletion.
The two dams, that is Kira and Nalubale, have been draining water beyond the agreed curve. It is already scientifically proven. There are studies that indicate 55% of the water released from Lake Victoria is as a result of the two dams. And if only 45% of the water that is released is attributed to environmental factors, including the drought factor. So the two dams, which drain 55% of the water, are the main responsible factors for the decline levels in Lake Victoria.
Uganda is the custodian of a greater part of the lake, which is also the source of the River Nile, Africa's longest river. The body charged with the management of the lake insists that a long drought that has hit the region for the last 3 years is to blame for the falling water levels. The falling water levels has greatly affected the supply of water for domestic use. Nsubuga Senfuma is Uganda's commissioner for water resources management.
Lake Victoria is a water body which is transboundary. It connects Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, and to some extent Rwanda and Burundi, because rivers coming from Rwanda and Burundi drain in Lake Victoria. Now, we have had a long outstanding drought in the region for now about 3 years, meaning that the major rivers which input water in Lake Victoria, in particular those ones in Nzoia, Yala, Kagera and Mara Marakisi in Tanzania and Kenya, have fallen in the volume, in the amount of water coming. As if that is not enough, the temperature on the water body, which has increased as a result of the heat, also has taken a lot of water from the system into the atmosphere. This is what we call evaporation. So 80% of the water coming on Lake Victoria is from rain. The rain increases in the region, that's in Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda and Burundi, increasing more water in the rivers, eventually the lake will recover, but not immediately.
Environmentalists say the prolonged drought spells, notwithstanding construction of hydropower dams at the point where Lake Victoria pours into the River Nile, is largely to blame for the falling water levels from the lake. About 30 million people depend on the lake for their livelihood. But experts say the water levels is at an 80-year low, echoing recent UN charges that hydropower dams that have been constructed by Uganda are largely responsible for the falling water levels of Lake Victoria. Water is now being rationed to users because water pumps of the suppliers have been left hanging in the air as the water levels fall further. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Joshua Charimpo reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
In Ecuador, a state of emergency has been declared in five of its provinces as indigenous groups continue protests against free trade talks with the U.S., this from the BBC. Locals have been blocking roads in highland areas since last week due to the fear that the trade deal to be negotiated in Washington this week will damage their way of life. The state of emergency bans public meetings and imposes a curfew. A final round of talks about the free trade deal is scheduled to begin in Washington on the 23rd of March, with a deal expected to be concluded in early April. That's the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, March 22nd, 2006. Weather for today calls for rain with temperatures in the mid-50s. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland and Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kboo.fm. Our producer for this morning's newscast is Brian Smith. Our assistant producer is myself. Our engineer is Boone Rivas. The KBOO Morning News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Carlos Chavez.
And I'm Brian Smith.